So it depends on your point of view, from which direction you're looking at them as to whether they're heroes or villains.
Yeah, I find that's usually the case with just about every single character in history. The rebels that marched against Rome. What did these often overlooked historical legends have in common, despite their wide range of backgrounds, circumstances, and motives? And did any of them make it out alive? Hello, this is Anya Leonard, founder and director of Classical Wisdom. You are listening to Classical Wisdom Speaks, a podcast dedicated to bringing ancient wisdom to modern minds. Today I'm speaking with Stephen Dando Collins, the award-winning and very prolific author of over 40 books, including Rise of an Empire, on which the major motion picture 300, Rise of an Empire, was based, as well as his most recent book, Seven Against Thebes. In today's episode, however, we discuss another one of his recent books, Rebels Against Rome. But before we begin, a quick thank you to our Classical Wisdom Society members who make this podcast possible. If you would like to become a society member and help support the classics, please go to classicalwisdom.com and click subscribe. Now, what has been the legacy of these rebels against Rome, and what were their lasting impacts? Well, I'd like to thank you, Stephen, so much for joining me. As I was saying before, I always love that you are so prolific with your writing because I get so many opportunities to speak with you. And you always cover such a wide range of topics. So this time it is Rebels Against Rome, 400 Years of Rebellion Against the Rule of Rome, which is it's a very different topic than some of your last ones.
It is indeed. And these are subjects I've encountered in 30, 40 years of research about the Empire of Ancient Rome. And I've covered some of them in various books, but never devoted a book to them alone. And as always, I often wait for somebody else to write these books, and nobody did. So my literary agent and my publisher said, well, you do it. So here we are.
Well, it's perfect because you spent so much time writing about these different characters, how they've interacted. So kind of bringing them all together gives you kind of an interesting oversight of the concept of what a rebel is in the first place. So maybe to start off, how would you define a rebel? Like what do they need to have in common?
In this context, in terms of the Roman Empire, there are several people I thought, oh, that'd make good subjects. But as I look more closely, I realised that they didn't really fit the narrow definition for this book, which was these were people that were within the Roman Empire as opposed to being outside the Roman Empire. They were Roman citizens in many cases, or Roman allies, some occasionally a slave who rebelled, but they were within the Roman Empire. So this excluded kings and other leaders of countries outside the realms of the Roman Empire who went to war with Rome. So, and there are quite, a number of quite famous people that's in that category. So having refined that down, I then compiled a list of 24 who fit the category.
And was 24 exhaustive, or did you get to 24 and you said, well, there's just too many rebels, I'm just going to stick with these ones, these are my favorites?
No. I probably had a list of 30 to begin with, but then I would find one that there was a chap who went to war against the Romans in Spain when Augustus was early in his reign. And but he was purely a bandit, because after causing the Roman troops great problems, Augustus offered a the man's name was Caracotta, and Augustus offered a reward of 1 million sesterces for his head, And lo and behold, Caracotta walks into Augustus's camp to claim the reward. And Augustus was so impressed, he gave him the money, let him go. He never bothered Rome again. So he wasn't really a rebel. He was a very daring bandit. So having eliminated one or two like him, I then made it a list from early in the empire till very late in the empire in the West, so roughly covering a period of 400 years.
Wow. I mean, that's one of the things that I thought was quite impressive when even just looking over the table of contents is seeing this, you know, huge diversity of people from completely different places and backgrounds. And, you know, it's one of those moments when you realize how truly diverse the Roman Empire was to have completely different diverse rebels.
Indeed. And some of them overlapped and some of them knew other rebels. But yes, as you say, very diverse. Britain features quite prominently. The British were quite revolting, and in the east, on the Rhine border in Gaul, these revolts weren't confined to just one particular area.
Were there some that you really enjoyed writing about that you thought, okay, this person needs to kind of get a little bit more of the spotlight in history's books?
Yes, I try to be even-handed, but I must admit one or two did and have for some time found my sympathy. And one was Sextus Pompey, the youngest son of Pompey the Great, Pompeius Magnus. And he had a very raw deal, and he tried really hard to stay alive, number one, and to remain faithful to the deals he did with the likes of Octavian and Mark Antony. And they stabbed him in the back regularly. And so I had great sympathy for him. And sadly, like most of the rebels, he ended up being executed.
Did any of them have a happy ending?
One or two. Queen Zenobia, from the east. Her rebellion lasted about 5 years, and from 267 AD, and she was captured by Rome. She was a Roman ally who took advantage of the situation that she basically controlled the east for Rome, and turned it into an empire of her own until. As so often happened, very slowly but methodically, the Roman Empire took up arms against her and defeated her. She was taken to Rome. She was led through the streets of Rome in the triumph of the general who defeated her, in golden chains, we're told, but then ended up marrying a Roman senator and living to quite old age. Her children rose up to be quite influential members of the Roman Empire at Rome. And her story ended reasonably well.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember reading that she was considered quite a beauty. So maybe perhaps yes. She went from captivated to captured to captivating. I might have been her ticket out.
I should have used the line.
And were there any rebels that you thought got their just desserts, that they shouldn't have attempted Rome, or they had very impure motives?
Several of them. One, I felt a little sorry for, but he was an idiot. Epiphanes, the prince of Commagene, he became upset because he wasn't given enough credit by the Romans in the siege of Jerusalem. In AD 70, when Titus finally conquered the Jewish revolt, and Epiphanes had led troops from Commagene to work with the Romans, and Titus scoffed at him and wasn't impressed with his boast that he could conquer Jerusalem for him, just with his Greek mercenaries. And so after he went home, he started talking to the Parthians about bringing Commagene into the Parthian Empire. And, of course, Rome found out about this, and the Roman governor of Syria invaded Commagene with one legion. And poor old Epiphanes soon had his comeuppance.
Now, I should just say that even though it is March 14th where I'm recording, you are recording ahead in the future on the Ides of March. And so I think we're starting to get some technical difficulties that is illustrating that Caesar's curse has lived with us to this day. Maybe you haven't written kindly enough about him in the past.
Yes, it's a recurring problem for me. Unfortunately, I live in the country, and my internet lets me down occasionally.
Well, I was going to blame the Ides of March. You don't have to blame the poor countryside, you know. So I would like to know, though, why focus on rebels? Like, should we be glorifying them or not? Are they heroes? Are they anti-heroes? Is there a reason to address specifically rebels?
Some of them had genuine grievances. They were treated very badly often by the local Roman administration rather than Rome itself. The governors of the Roman provinces had enormous power, and to apply to Rome to have your case heard was a major undertaking. And so a number of rebels did have genuine grievances, and some of them were genuine freedom fighters. Others were opportunists. And some of the rebels were Roman governors themselves, who thought their emperor, an emperor such as Claudius, was weak and they could easily topple him. And so they started rebellions in their own provinces with their own troops, their own Roman troops, thinking that they could topple the emperor. So the motives varied. And as I say, some of those motives were quite genuine.
I wonder, was there any correlation between ones that had more honorable motivations and their level of success, or was just one of many factors?
All of them, in the end, failed, if not wholly, then partially. Ventidius, the Roman, another one that has my sympathy, in Britain, he rebelled against Rome and survived for 40 years, and as far as we know, died in his bed. So he was the only one that we know of that had that survived and wasn't caught by the Romans. And he rebelled twice and sealed a peace deal after the initial rebellion. And then after the civil war broke out after the death of Nero, he rose up again in Britain and was quite successful for a time. A city like Lincoln, which was a Roman legion base at the time, he burnt to the ground. He was one of the exception then, who lived a long life and didn't pay for his rebellion.
It really is true, the saying, "Count no man happy till his end," right?
Yeah, exactly. And another one I felt for, I mentioned earlier, they had genuine grievances. Servilus, the Batavian rebel. Batavia was an area at the mouth of the Rhine, which basically we would say was the Netherlands today, but they were considered a Germanic people. And he'd served Rome for 25 years as a prefect, leading their auxiliaries, and in fact helped put down rebellions in Britain, for example, and had been a very loyal servant of Rome. So he retires, and the governor of that part of Roman Germany decided that his brother, Servilus's brother, was a rebel and executed him without any real evidence. And so Servilus, as can be can be imagined, became very unhappy. And then when he saw his opportunity with the Roman eyes looking at the civil war after the death of Nero, he took his opportunity to raise his people and all the Germanic people within the Roman Empire along the Rhine. So, but he ended badly as well.
Yeah, well, I think another one that ended badly was Boudica, and she was, very beloved in Britain. But yeah, she had, I felt like, pretty good reasons to fight as well. Then also did not end well.
Exactly. Her husband, much older than her, had died. He was a prince of his tribe, the Iceni in Norfolk of today's England. And the administrator in London sent his slaves to basically pillage his estate. And it's said that they raped Boudicca's two daughters in the process. So she definitely had a good reason to hate the Romans. And she was selected by the tribes of southern Britain as their war queen to lead their rebellion. They were very not very nice, I have to say, the rebels, when they captured people in today's Colchester and in London. Most of them were Romanized Britons, but they were Celts, and that didn't matter to the rebels. They impaled them on stakes and burned them to death, tens of thousands of them. And it always makes me smile that there's a statue of Boudicca in London on the embankment opposite Big Ben. And she's shown in a Roman chariot with British cavalry horses, no reins. There are a size on the wheels that neither the Britons nor the Romans used size on the wheels. So it was somewhat glorified. They're celebrating the woman who burnt Rome to the ground. So that has always tickled me.
Yeah, it's a bit ironic.
It is, isn't it? But like so many of these rebels, Arminius, the German, or Hermann, as he was known in Germany, and Boudicca have been celebrated, particularly in the 18th and 19th century, as great national heroes, and with statues and so on. It depends on your point of view, from which direction you're looking at them, as to whether they were heroes or villains.
Yeah, I find that's usually the case with just about every single character in history. We got to take some of the nice things about them and you know, maybe put aside the less tasteful features.
And never trust an autobiography, because yes, it's written from a biased point of view.
Most definitely. With regards to Rome as an empire having so many rebellions, I mean, did they have more than most empires, or is it just with an empire you just expect a certain number of rebellions?
Well, one of the good things about the Roman Empire, as far as we're concerned, is it was so well documented. So it could well have been in China or Parthia or wherever. It could well have been a great many more rebellions than we know about, because the Romans and the Greeks documented their history so well. But there's still so much of that was lost. We read about so many books by Roman authors, for example, that have been lost to us. And there's a section of Tacitus that has been missing since ancient times. Now, I'd love to read it. It just may be in some ancient library somewhere, we just don't know. But basically, the reason that we know about so many rebels against the Roman Empire is because it was so well documented at the time.
Yeah, I always sort of dream that one day we're going to find so many of these lost documents in an Egyptian trash heap, and just keep hoping, you never know.
They're still digging at it.
Exactly. Were the Romans particularly good at handling the rebellions? I mean, I suppose, as you say, they all failed. So, I mean...
Well, it varied. It depended on the local commander. Usually, there was a 15-day rebellion in Egypt very early in the Roman Empire, so it was put down within 15 days. And I mentioned that in passing, but I don't go into detail because we don't know the names of the rebel leaders or any other details. So I can't write about it if I don't know about it. That was an exception. Some rebellions lasted years. And with great difficulty were put down by the Roman authorities. But sometimes it was the making of a Roman general to put down a rebellion. In other cases, it was the end of their reputation and sometimes their life.
You mentioned some of these rebels before that have had sort of nationalistic symbols. Are there other rebels that have just had a lasting impact, a legacy that we can still sort of see today?
I mentioned Boudicca and Arminius. They're probably the two most outstanding. And some of them, I think the majority of my readers would never have heard of unless they really delve deep into their ancient texts. So some of the stories I tell, I think, will be quite enlightening to many readers. For example, Ventidius, and he was his wife was the first British queen, Cardamandua, and they were an interesting couple. And she divorced him for his armor bearer, and so that made him a gave him a good reason not to like his wife. And his second rebellion actually unseated her, but the Romans looked after her. They took her down to what would be the Welsh border today, and she lived out, we assume, lived out the rest of her life in a villa there. So there are a number of these sorts of people that, as I say, most the readers would not have heard of, and I think it would be quite illuminating to for them to read their stories.
It's really interesting to think about that why did the Romans document it so well? I mean, there's obviously a long tradition of once you suppress somebody or your enemy to try to wipe them out from the history books or get rid of them. I mean, you would think that the Roman Empire, it wouldn't benefit them to document how many times people went against them.
Well, it's interesting. If someone wrote within, if a rebellion happened in their lifetime, they tended to be fairly patriotic, pro-Roman in their account. But if it was 100, 200 years later, the writers tended to stand back and be a bit more sympathetic. For example, Tacitus, in several of the rebellions that he documents, he shows you quite strong sympathy for the rebels, and it was quite critical of the Roman administration for the way they either caused the rebellion in some cases or handled it. So Tacitus is one of the better documentarians as far as the Roman rebellions are concerned.
What were your other favorite sources then for finding about these rebels?
One of the least reliable was probably Cassius Dio. He was writing in many instances long after and put his own slant on it on various rebellions. But Josephus, he talking about the Jewish revolt in which he took part. That's one of the rare occasions where one of the rebels is actually writing the story. So his account is fascinating, but as I mentioned about autobiographies, be careful because they're going to put a slant on it that's favorable to them. We know from other sources that he was considered a complete traitor by fellow Jews because he changed sides. He was captured by Titus's father Vespasian and changed sides and advised them the Romans and ended up with a property at Rome and Romans with Roman citizenship and very much favored by the emperors. He was given a property back in Judea after his own property was confiscated for a Roman military base. He tried to write his account to make himself, what I did, what I did for my people. Not really. But as I say, it's fascinating that here's an account from one of the rebels.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think it's just an absolutely interesting book because, as you say, it's rare to kind of collect all these different stories that span 400 years, and you kind of get this really interesting look at the Roman Empire from sort of in and outside of it at the same time, which is kind of a unique perspective. Now, this is always one of my favorite questions to ask you at the end of a podcast. What number of books now does this make it?
Okay, this is book number 45. Book number 46 coming out in the US this coming September. And I just finished a draft of book number 47 yesterday.
Wow. Okay. Can you give us a hint of the next ones as well?
I sure
I know one
can.
of them.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. The next one is Seven Against Thebes. This is Greek history and a favorite story of mine since I was a boy. This is I've tried to write what, to my mind, my analysis is the historical story based around a great legend in ancient Greek history. About 25 years before the siege of Troy, seven heroes went against the city of Thebes, to install one of their number on the throne. He was a deposed king of Thebes, only a young man. And integral to the story is the story of Oedipus, the king of Thebes, who famously killed his own father and married his own mother unwittingly. And it was as a result of that that his two sons shared the throne of Thebes, one threw out the other, and then we have this war of the seven against Thebes. And so I've attempted to make some historical, an historical account of this legend, which much of which comes to us from famous Greek plays such as Oedipus Rex, Oedipus the King, and Seven Against Thebes, which was the original account. And it, from advanced reviews, it seems to have gone down rather well. So, and of course they're saying, when's the movie coming? So that's...
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I'm lucky enough to have also gotten to get to read an advanced copy of it. And it's really, especially for all of us classics geeks who have read the plays, it's really satisfying to see them all stitched together, you know, and to bring them all together in one work. And then, you know, of course you kind of recognize parts. So it's sort of like it's a nice reenactment in a way of how the Greeks would have experienced it, because you know what's going to happen, but you're still enjoying the suspense of it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And I, in the latter part of this book, I've given an extensive afterword to explain why I've written it the way I've written it, and why I believe that source or and not that one, and given reasons for it and so on. And one of the advanced reviewers, a lovely professor at University of Cambridge, said he enjoyed the after notes as much as the main story. So, you know, as I say, I've explained why I've written it the way I've written it.
Wonderful. And so number 47, can we get any hints to that one as well? Or is that under wraps?
It is Roman history again, but yes, that's under wraps. My publishers say, don't give away too much too soon. Somebody else will run with the idea.
Well, I love it. We'll leave listeners to guess in suspense. Well, thank you again, Stephen, so much. I'll have links below for everybody to enjoy this fantastic Rebels Against Rome, and so they can get a little look of these characters throughout history that might have not gotten as much spotlight in the past.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Anya.
Thank you for listening to Classical Wisdom Speaks, a podcast dedicated to bringing ancient wisdom to modern minds.